Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. Not just another episode of Lords of Limited. This is the Pioneer Masters Crash Course. My name is Ben Warney. Joining me on the line is a man. Normally, I'm struggling to find a magic card to go in the middle of his two names. I have so many cards to choose from this week, and I have landed on, joining me on the line, Mr. Ethan Crypt Incursion Sachs. This is the 2-black instant from Pioneer Masters. Exile all creature cards from target player's graveyard. You gain 3 life for each card exiled this way. Speaking of past trauma, right before we hit record here, Ethan, tell the people about Crypt Incursion.
Well, first of all, I'm flattered that you're watching not only the drafts of my YouTube videos, but the gameplay as well.
Yeah. Oh, listen, I only got 2 drafts in of Pioneer Masters myself during early access because that day was a whirlwind. Taught lessons, had a concert that evening. So I played Magic till midnight, till I was exhausted, but felt like I needed to be more prepped. So I watched your videos, I watched LSV videos. So I've seen more drafts than I've played.
You've seen both sides of the Hornet's Nest.
I have seen both sides of the Hornet's Nest. I also thought about Hornet's Nest. And listen, a Big Fin Bouncer is just dangling there. We got to update the people on the poll.
We got to update the people on the poll. Well, let's first talk about Crypt Incursion. So if you aren't watching the YouTube drafts, I will have a total of 3 up on our channel from Early Access if you want to get those in before we start rolling out Pioneer Masters content once it goes live on Tuesday. It was a card that I shouted out in the draft. Like, you couldn't have scripted this better. I shouted it out while drafting.
Just like, so juicy.
You know, trying my due diligence to like look at as many cards as possible. Like, people are new to the set, whatever. And I shout out Crypt Incursion. I'm like, well, this card is just completely unplayable. Must be like a constructed plant or whatever. Playing a game with my deck, get my opponent down to 2 life, you know, timing things out. They're going to be dead next turn. It's going to be fine. And then they cast Crypt Incursion and gain 18 life. And that's what allows them the time to get back there. I believe it was Stormtide Leviathan, which is the 8 mana 8/8 that then I was dead to. So yeah, that's the card for me.
Well, and it's an instant. They could have done it at instant speed, right? Didn't they do it at sorcery speed? Because you were attacking unprofitably to get them dead.
Correct, yeah.
And I think they'd fired it off main phase on their turn, and yeah, it still was enough life for you. Your face was so professional for the YouTube video. I could tell you were dying on the inside. Oh, yeah.
all steamed up. And yeah, we could. Why don't you update the people on the poll? Even though, so here's the funny thing is that we talked about doing the poll on the show. Ben was like, I'll do it. Of course, he promptly forgets. And I did as well. And then as I'm editing the show, I come to that part and I'm like, I should do this. Like, this is good engagement, whatever. It'll be good content. I knew I was going to make a YouTube short of that segment as well. What happened in the Refute versus Big Fin Bouncer poll, Ben?
The best of all possible outcomes happened. Big Fin Bouncer, 50%. Refute, you would think 50%, but no, Refute 48%, because Ethan mistakenly included other as an option, and those Jill Stein voters out there, 2%, just absolutely savaging Ethan. So Big Fin Bouncer, best blue common, you'll love to see it.
Yeah. Taste it, I believe is what I said you were going to say to me. That's in the past, Ben. That's Foundations. I don't want to hear it anymore. We're talking Pioneer Masters. And this is such a weird crash course for us because it's a fully reprint set. And so we didn't really do a previews episode because we've played with all of the cards ostensibly before. And we've also actually got our hands on the cards before doing the crash course because of the early access event, but not so for our listeners. So how to like approach this episode is a little interesting, but I think the big change, the big thing you will not find is we haven't graded the cards in a spreadsheet. So we won't be doing a card grading spreadsheet, and we won't have that segment of this episode in terms of us like dickering and dealing over grading differences, which means you get spared the numbers and letters grading scale this time, but it's coming back for you for Etherdrift, believe you me. But we are going to just give ourselves the opportunity to, you know, we will certainly do big picture overview stuff and give ourselves the opportunity to talk about as many individual cards as we think matter in the format before you get your hands on the cards on Tuesday.
Absolutely. And before we get into any and all that, we want to, of course, take the time to shout out the Patreon, which is how you can get back to the show. if you want to get back to the show. I'm unusual doing this, so it'll probably be a little different than Ethan's spiel, but the base level is the Discord, and I think that's the best thing we offer as a Patreon reward tier. So for as little as $5 a month, that's the entry level option, you get access to the Discord, which is, you know, a place for like-minded limited folks like you. We always say it at the start of a new set, but it's going to be hopping, popping as soon as Pioneer Masters drops on Tuesday. So if you're not in there and it's been dangling around in your brain, you maybe want to check it out. See, we've got this new free trial option available that'll get you in the Discord for a week as well, I assume.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you always wanted to see what's going on in the Lords of Limited Discord behind the scenes, take advantage of that opportunity. And I think the newest thing to shout out about the Patreon, which is where we're, you know, trying to give you the most bang for your buck, is our new podcast, Lords Unlimited. That's at one of the higher reward tiers. You'll get a second podcast from Ethan and I that releases on Thursdays, where we generally are going over some draft logs, but really it's called Lords Unlimited. We're talking about whatever we want. So if you're liking what Ethan and I do every week and you want to have some more of us in your life, consider heading on over to the Patreon, checking out what we've got to offer over there. And that's it. That's my spiel. So if you want to check it out, head over to the Patreon, and we're going to welcome our new members who have either joined or done a free trial. Listen, you can get a shout out on the episode just by signing up for a free trial. So we're welcoming to the Lords of Limited family this week, Django, Luke, Zasty the Muffin, Matt, Starwind, Cody, Loco, Nathan, and Jamie. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your support.
Yeah. Cannot say thank you enough, as Ben always says. And we've switched roles here for this week because I'm going to be shouting out a new sponsor of the show for this week, which is the Mana Pool, which is a person-to-person card trading website.
Mana Pool is a new marketplace focused exclusively on buying and selling Magic cards. They have over 9 million singles in stock, connecting many sellers large and small, including top-shelf game stores such as Tales of Adventure, Super Games, and Mighty Meeple. Mana Pool has a fast and user-friendly interface, which works well on both mobile and desktop. One of their coolest features is the Cart Optimizer, which uses advanced mathematics to find the least expensive cart for your orders. You can use the Buy button for Mana Pool from Archidect.com or paste in a deck list in almost any format from all of the major Magic websites. If you're looking for singles to fill out a cube or need a constructed deck for your local RCQ, we highly encourage trying out Mana Pool. If you compare Mana Pool's prices to other markets, you'll find they're often the lowest due to their low fees for sellers. You can compare for yourself if you use edhrec.com and set Mana Pool as one of your price options there to compare to other platforms. Mana Pool's three founders have a deep love of the game that goes back decades. They're quick to answer all questions on Discord and email to make sure all buyers are happy with their order. Try out Mana Pool today, either as a buyer or seller. At least the first 100 people to sign up at manapool.com/LOL will receive 10,000 extra mana that you can use to get $10 in discounts on your orders.
All right. I think the first thing to touch on is the archetypes. And we have not only a signpost uncommon, two signpost uncommons, plus a common, plus bonus sheet goodies in Pioneer Masters for each color pair. It is a bounty of multicolor, though I always want to say gold cards in the format.
Yeah, they're gold cards. Are they not gold cards?
I don't know. I feel like you're supposed to. I feel like multicolor is the preferred. Not that gold is like offensive or anything, but that I just feel like it's not.
I was going to say, am I Republican if I say gold?
I just feel like it boomers us a little bit, you know, to say gold. I don't know. Maybe the kids are calling them gold cards too.
Gold for me.
Okay. Well. So a lot of gold cards. We're not going to read 30 cards then. Like I said, we're going to be just trying to chat about the cards we think matter or whatever. So we've highlighted one card per color pair. And also, there is no WotC article of like, here's what Orzhov is trying to do. So I made up my own titles for the color pairs.
Which are the same as WotC usually are. I mean, these are some pretty stereotypical limited archetypes. But the cool thing is, and I'm sure we're going to get into this in the episode, but they're juiced versions of their limited archetypes. But one of the other things that I really like about Pioneer Masters initially is that there's a lot of counterplay to all of the various archetypes. Like there's been stuff seeded in to combat the various strategies that are juiced up.
Ben and I joined a draft together during early access and we were actually sitting next to each other. I was passing to him. And then afterwards he was like, do you want to do a direct challenge? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he had some hexproof creatures, but I of course had not one, not two, but three edict effects to combat these hexproof creatures. That's the kind of counterplay that you can expect for like, you see hexproof stuff and you're like, oh man, is that really like, how do you deal with that? And there actually are the tools to handle those kinds of cards. So first up, we've got Boros. This feels like kind of like the headliner thing of the format. And I should say, I call this set Theros Remastered, and I stand by it. It's a lot of Theros cards, a lot of Theros themes and mechanics. It's very Theros heavy, I think.
I think you are doing a disservice to Pioneer Masters. Theros was not one of my favorite formats, and I very much enjoyed my first two Pioneer Masters drafts. This set is very good. Looks very good to me.
I am coming in on the other side. Usually Ben, I liked Foundations, Ben didn't. I'm so far not impressed by Pioneer Masters. We'll see, but it's got some work to do. My losing in the format notwithstanding, I'm not sure how much I like this format. But I'll get to something that you said on your stream that I thought really kind of clicked something for me, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Let's chat about what these archetypes are doing. Boros is heroic. So heroic is a mechanic that cares about you targeting a creature with a spell. So whether that's an instant, a sorcery, an aura, an enchantment, there's lots of that stuff happening. And that'll give a bonus to either that creature or all your creatures potentially with this signpost.
Yeah, so first up here, we've got Annax and Cymede. This is one red white for a 3/2 uncommon with first strike and vigilance. It's heroic whenever you cast a spell that targets Annax and Cymede. Creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain trample until end of turn. This used to be a rare. Downshifted to uncommon, baby.
Yeah, very powerful card. I was playing one of my matches against a red white opponent, and I was like, just kind of chilling. I was at 18, they were at 20, and I was like, the whole time, I was like, I don't feel good. I don't feel good. Like, I just don't feel good. And there's this thing that happens with the heroic player, which is that, you know, you've tapped out and then they go swing all and they've got ostensibly air quotes bad attacks. But you're like, I know nothing good can come from this. Next up is Rakdos. What's going on with Rakdos?
Rakdos, we have named rectangles. I think Rakdos mid-range probably is more what it is. Like, it just seems like a lot of great rate cards, exemplified here by its gold uncommon, Blood Tithe Harvester.
Oof.
Black red for a 3/2 at uncommon. When it ETBs, you make a blood token, and you can sacrifice Blood Tithe Harvester to give target creature -X/-X, where X is twice the number of blood tokens you control.
Yeah, I mean, I think rectangle, like you could say value mid-range, 2-for-1s, whatever. But like, yeah, it's Lords Limited. I got to name the archetype, so I'm naming it rectangles.
And we should, I think, probably now makes the most sense to talk about how impressed we've been with the archetypes. I think Boros is certainly going to be a boogeyman of the format as far as speed. Like,
yep,
there have been a lot of slow games of Pioneer Masters, but Boros is fast, and I would expect it to be very good. Both you and I have played Rakdos, and I think we know it is excellent. Rakdos is going to be one of the best decks in the format.
Well, and going back to something we've been trying to peg in the Playbooster era, when we've got multiple signpost cards and we have triples of them now in this format, plus the bonus sheet stuff that we'll get to, Blood Tithe Harvester is, I think, one of the best multicolor uncommons. And Dreadbore, I think, is one of, if not the best, multicolor common. And that's a downshifted from rare. That's Rakdos's common. It's black red for a sorcery, destroy a creature, or planeswalker. Those two things being extremely powerful and cheap, and both being 2 mana committed to that color pair, means that, like, if you carve that out, you're going to get those cards passed to you. Like, no one's splashing Blood Tithe Harvester, you wouldn't think.
Right. Well, and the third one, Swift Warkite, which is 4 black red for a 4/4 flyer, lets you rebuy a creature mana value 3 or less, either from your graveyard or you can put one from your hand into play and it gets haste until the end of turn, but then it goes back to your hand. So if your Blood Tithe Harvester has died or you've used it, you can pick it back up out of the graveyard. All three of Rakdos's gold uncommons are just insane.
Yeah. So yes, very, very impressed with Rakdos. That is probably going to be, I mean, no surprise, probably going to be my favorite, but I think one of the best archetypes as well. Next up, we've got Orzhov, which is Aristocrats, named for the signpost Cartel Aristocrat, white, black for a 2/2. And you can sack another creature to give Cartel Aristocrat protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. This card is annoying to interact with, but I have not been impressed by Orzhov. I have played it twice now, and I definitely had some like issues with that one draft we talked about that's on YouTube, but I drafted it twice, and certainly small sample size, but the creatures are really small. And that's one of the things that I think you just can't afford to do, because some of the other colors like green get very large threats. And when you're paying 4 mana for Syndicate Messenger, which is a 2/3 flyer with Afterlife 1, which you think, oh, that's synergistic, it's evasive, it's going to die into a 1/1. I want multiple bodies for my sacrifice deck. it's just too much when other people are playing 4-mana 4/4s.
That's what I think as well. It lives in an awkward place in the format in that it's not particularly fast, but it also doesn't pack a particularly strong punch in the late game. And there's a lot of things that do pack a very, like, you're just eking out small amounts of value, and you can get value in bigger chunks easier.
Yep. I'm sort of out on Orzhov right now.
That takes us on to Golgari, which is the classic graveyard stuff, except it is very supported here. So gold uncommon that we're highlighting is Nyx Weaver, 1 black green for a 2/3 spider with reach. It's an enchantment creature. At the beginning of your upkeep, mill 2 cards, and you can pay 1 black green and exile Nyx Weaver to return target card from your graveyard to your hand. There's tons of stuff to go along with this. There's tons of self-mill. There's delve cards like Treasure Cruise floating around, the 7 blue sorcery, draw 3 cards with delve. So you can definitely get paid off for dumping things in your graveyard. There's also a lot of creatures that care about power and toughness equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So definitely a supported theme here. Usually it's like, black, green, graveyard stuff. What is it doing? Oh, it's doing graveyard stuff, and it's doing it well.
Takes us on to Dimir, which is largely control, I think. But I wrote delve just because I think it interacts with the graveyard extremely favorably. I think you want to be thinking about your graveyard as a resource in Dimir. You mentioned Treasure Cruise. There's also Gurmag Angler, which is a 5/5 creature that's 7 mana with delve in black. And blue-black uses the graveyard quite a bit. Tomebound Lich being a card that fills it. 1 blue-black for a 1/3 with Death Touch and Lifelink. Whenever it enters or deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card and then discard a card. Not quite Smuggler's Copter, but it does some work.
Yeah, well, the other thing we should shout, I think we should shout Dinrova Horror too, because when I saw this for the first time, I went into this format blind, which is the first time I've done that in a long, long, long time. My week had just been insane, and I knew I was going to get a play on Thursday, and I figured, all right, I'll play Thursday and then just figure out the format Friday before we record.
And they weren't new cards to you.
Also that, too. Yeah, that helped. But Dinrova Horror, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, this being in the format is huge. So 4 blue-black for a 4/4, ETBs, return target permanent to its owner's hand. Then that player discards a card. This is an old card, but a goodie. That card is powerful and eminently splashable.
Yeah, it's an excellent card. The only reason I didn't think we had to shout it out is I have to imagine that it is on. I know it's on one of my lists we'll have later on, and I have to imagine it'll be on one of yours as well.
It is on one of my lists. I was trying to think what list it was going to be on, but yes, it's on one of my lists, which is the top three gold uncommons.
Yeah. That takes us on to Gruul. What's going on with Red Green?
Ferocious, 4-power greater, but ostensibly just beat down. I've played against Red Green some. And the starts, I think it's Saging Voider is what it's called. 1 and a green for a 1/2 where you can tap it to untap target land.
Voyaging Satyr, yeah.
Voyaging Satyr. What did I say? Satyring Voyager?
Yeah.
Wait, Satyring a verb?
Yeah.
Voyaging Satyr. Satyr's a creature. But the starts where they go that into, a 4/4 trample or something. Those starts are tough from Red Green. It was weird. I lost to Red Green twice playing Red Black. And just felt favored the whole time, both games. Like, I'm still not quite sure how I ended up losing those games. I had to have misplayed somewhere, playing too conservatively along the way or something. But red-green can hit hard in a hurry. Card we're highlighting here, Gorklan Rampager. This is 2 red-green for a 4/4 trample. And it's got Blood Rush, which is you can play it as a combat trick, ostensibly. So you pay red-green and discard it to give target attacking creature +4/+4 and trample until end of turn.
Takes us on to Simic. Classic blue-green is Ramp, highlighted by Kiora's Follower, green-blue for a 2/2 merfolk, and you can tap it to untap another target permanent. So you can certainly, use that to ramp, use that to fix for double-colored cards in your deck, and you can also untap creatures if you want. I had this, it came up, my opponent had Imperial Sovereign, I think is what it's called. It's the 1 and a white 2/1 that has your opponent's creatures come into play tapped. Kiora's Follower was very helpful that game in making sure my creatures were untapped the turn I cast them.
Impressions of Simic so far?
I don't think I've seen pure Simic. As I think we will expect, Simic is going to often be splashing. I think that's just like sort of what green-blue usually does in a lot of formats. I think it'll be playing with red a lot of the time, but there's a Gates theme that we'll get to a little bit later on as well. So there's Gates Matters, and Gates are the sort of fixing aside from Evolving Wilds in the format. So I think Simic is probably going to be splashing around a lot, getting into black, getting into red, that sort of thing. And so I think we'll play out like that. I haven't played with it yet myself.
And so we kind of got lost along the way here talking about how good we expect the archetypes to be. Golgari, I would say going backwards, graveyard stuff, I'm not a huge buyer early on in the format. I mean, it's definitely there. You can definitely do it, but it's not going to be straight Golgari. It's more going to be like you're drafting a graveyard deck. I think Dimir, I'm a huge buyer on. Dimir looks absolutely insane to me when I've played against it. I barely beat Ham in early access, mized him out with the Boggly Boys. And I gave one of my creatures Pro Blue. He'd been like color screwed the whole game, and he still almost beat me with Dimir. His deck was a million times better than mine. And then Gruul, I don't love it. Just playing creatures seems tough to me in this format. The removal has been impressive.
Interesting. I think removal is very important for sure. But I don't know. I think Gruul can get there. It's interesting if we're looking at just like the signposts. Gruul's signposts are very unimpressive, like Beyond Gore Clan Rampager, the other two aren't much to sneeze at. Dimir has great ones. I think Golgari's are actually pretty dang good and all like have value. I think what'll be interesting is, you know, we're both high on Rakdos, and Rakdos feels mid-rangey, I think. I think Golgari can feel that way too, but in a dangerous sense, like getting lost in between the like decks that are really fast and the decks that will beat you in the late game. Like, I wonder if Golgari sort of gets lost in the middle there.
Yeah. All right, takes us on to Izzet, which is spells, highlighting Storm Chaser Mage here, which is blue-red at uncommon for a 1/3 flying haste prowess. But there's also Steam Auger here, which is 2 blue-red for an instant speed factor fiction. Like, look at the top 5, put them into 2 files.
It's reverse factor fiction, though. It's worse, because they pick the pile. You make the piles, they pick.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So worse factor fiction. Sorry.
Yeah.
But a card advantage engine. So blue red has the ability to go both ways, as it often does. Like, you can draft blue red tempo beatdown. You can draft blue red control. Personally, right now, I'm more a fan of blue red control. I just think like the beatdown stuff is not quite as fast as Boros Heroic or whatever, if you're wanting to be aggressive.
Yeah, that checks out. Again, this is not a streamlined color pair that I've seen very much of yet. So. Jury's out for me. Next, we have Azorius, which is, I guess, Flyers slash Flash, but mostly Flyers, highlighted by Thunderclap Wyvern. 2 white blue for a 2/3 Flyer with Flash. Other creatures you control with flying get +1/+1.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Azorius, first of all. Like, as a streamlined two-color pair, I think it's been quite good. But I played against it a couple times and frequently lost games to Bestowing onto Flyers. Like, there's a 1/1 double striker bestow card, like, so either a giant flyer gaining double strike when I was tapped out and I couldn't block it, or something having some large creature getting Nimbus Naiad is back, which is the 2 and a blue 2/2 flyer that you can bestow for 4 and a blue, something jumping into the air +2/+2 that I wasn't expecting. Like, it can clock you in a hurry. And then they have Sky Knight as the common, which is just an insane card. 1 white blue for 3/1 flyer, and you detain something the turn it comes down, so it nullifies it for a whole turn.
Yeah.
So it's a huge tempo hit.
Yeah, all 3 of Azorius's cards, the 2 uncommons and the common, they all hit for me. Like, I think they're all really good.
Yeah, and that's just the mark of, okay, when all 3 cards hit, it's just going to be a good streamlined color pair.
Correct.
Next up, we've got Selesnya, which is Go Tall and or the Boggly Boys, as Maria likes to say from the Good Luck High Five podcast. There's Hexproof, Boggles are back, and the uncommon we're going to highlight here gets worn very well by those Boggles. It's Unflinching Courage, 1 green-white for an uncommon aura. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has trample and lifelink.
Yeah, you had a chance to play with Unflinching Courage in a deck that you kept saying, I think this is bad, but it kept winning too, right?
I still think it's bad. I kept winning, and I still think that deck was bad. Still think green white is bad.
I also thought it looked bad. As I was watching those games, I was like, your opponents are kind of stumbling. They're like not doing like the best stuff. And I was not super impressed by it. Honestly,
there was also a random treasure cruise splashed in that deck, which Ethan was like, we got to get that treasure cruise out of there. And it just kept appearing in my hand, and it kept being absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, you kept mulliganing treasure cruise openers. I was like, can we please cut this thing? Honestly, the card that I've been impressed by the most of Selesnya is its common Selesnya Charm. It's green white for an instant. It has 3 modes. You can either make a 2/2. Green and white knight token. I think it has vigilance. You can exile a creature with power 5 or greater, or you can give something +2/+2 until end of turn. And all 3 of those modes kind of hit, like, as starting the chain for your auras, exiling something large, like a Gurmag Angler or something that like your opponent's going tall and you get to answer it, or as a way to target your own heroic creatures.
I also got Ham super good in the game I mized him with. I had a huge Boggly Boy suited up and he tried to edict me and I instant speed made a 2/2 so that I could sacrifice the 2/2.
The tech. Very good.
Yeah, Selesnya Charm is very versatile. The other card that Selesnya has, which I assume we're going to be talking about later, so we might as well shout it out now. Gnarlback Rhino, 2GG for a 4/4 trample, and whenever it gets targeted, you draw a card whenever you target it with something, and there are tons of fight spells in the format. Mm-hmm. Card is so good. Like, I think rather than focusing on boggles, if you're playing green and you're trying to do the target stuff, Gnarlback Rhino is what you want to go after. That card is a house.
I assume that's definitely on my top 10 commons list. I assume it's on yours.
It is not. I had it as a sleeper, but that was pre-watching LSV play with it a little bit more. I was already impressed with it and then was even more impressed after watching him play with it.
It's one of the few cards that you and I have not played with, because while it is a reprint, it was not in the limited set of whatever core set I think it was in. Because I was like looking up, I was like, where is this card from? And I was like, oh, it's got a set number of like 315. So I never played with it before. And it's very impressive. You know when you discover a new binge-worthy show, or a song that you play on repeat, or an underrated common in a new format, and you have to share it with your friends so they can experience just how awesome it is?
It's kind of what it feels like when you discover that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Such an awesome deal, there's no way you can keep it to yourself.
Friends don't let friends overpay for wireless. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan and switch to Mint Mobile.
$15 a month? That's less than an entry into the Arena Open. It's so cheap!
Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/LOL.
That's mintmobile.com/LOL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/LOL. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on the unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Takes us on to just chatting quickly about the bonus sheets. And if you played Shadows over Innistrad Remastered, you will be no stranger to this. There are bonus sheets seeded into the format, and they're going to be rotating. So we have this format actually for 6 weeks, which is kind of wild that we only played Foundations for 3 and we'll have Pioneer Masters for 6. But so every 2 weeks, there'll be a bonus sheet rotating. And the themes for these 3 bonus sheets are: the first one will be Planeswalkers, the second one is Spells, and the third one is Devotion. So I believe there's a dedicated slot in the pack for one card, and I believe these sheets have about 40 cards in each of them. And so we'll be talking a little bit about the things to highlight from those lists. This week, we'll be chatting about the Planeswalker sheet.
So, question I have, because I couldn't figure this out. In Shadows of Innistrad Remastered, those sheet cards were stamped. Like, you could see which one they were with a certain icon. That did not seem to be the case to me here. And so, I do know what some of them are more now after studying up on Friday, but I had no way to know other than, like, if it said Planeswalker, obviously I knew that was one of the bonus sheet cards, but it was hard to tell if a bonus sheet card was missing from a pack to me, because some of them all, not all of them, are specifically referencing Planeswalkers.
That is correct, and I'm now remembering that's true, that there was, they had different set symbols, I think, and that's not the case here for Pioneer Masters. They're just in the pack, and they've got the same little spyglass set symbol.
So we just got to know again. As I was complaining to you about when we were trying to put this crash course together, we just have to memorize the bonus sheets.
Yeah, exactly. It's not hard. You can do it.
Okay. I just got to be more committed. I'll up my game. I'm sorry.
All right, I'm going to cede the floor to you, sir. Let's give some early color, power, and archetype rankings.
Yeah, it's very early. Again, I've played 2 drafts, watched 4 drafts, filled this out before, watching my 4 drafts last night and this morning. But early color power rankings, if I had to be put on the spot right now, I would say blue seems like a front runner to me. I was very impressed. I've not played with blue yet, but mm-hmm. was very impressed playing against blue. And I think blue's archetypes, all with the exception of blue-green, are quite strong. Have them all in tier 1. We'll get to the archetype power rankings in a second. And then a bit of a cop-out here, but red equal to white equal to black. I think if I had to put them in order, I'd say probably red and black ahead of white. But then mostly the other thing that stuck out to me is green bringing up the rear again, classic Lords of the Limited, hating green. But it just doesn't look friendly to green to me. Green's playing dudes, and there's just so many premium ways to interact in the format. Green just gets crushed by removal. But that being said, I did lose to those two red-green decks. I don't know. Those are my early color power rankings. Take that for what you will. I just like getting it out into the void, you know, seeing if I'm right, seeing if I'm wrong.
I know.
And then the early archetype power rankings. Tier one, got red, white, heroic, feel very strong. That's going to be a great archetype. Red, black, that is probably the one I'm most confident about being excellent. Blue, black, I feel very confident there again as well. Slightly less confident about blue, white, and blue, red, but both of those are in tier one as well. And then in tier two, and maybe white, black needs to be bumped down here, but in tier two, I have white, black, and red, green. So maybe we're bumping white, black down to tier three. But then in tier three, the other green color pairs, blue, green, white, green, black, green. It just feels awkward. You're giving up so much by drafting green. So many of the premium cards are in colors that are not green. Blood Tithe Harvester is insane. Dinrova Horror is insane. Like a lot of the things that are going to be in our top cards lists are not green cards. But the nice thing about the format is, I think, the stuff is there for green to hit hard. Like if it's open for you, much like green and foundations, green's having a resurgence over there right now because the word is out and enough people know and the drafters who are left know, oh, green stinks, and a lot of people are avoiding it too much. And then you can take advantage of that. I think the same thing is going to be happening here. Like green's got the tools to do work. You can just do that same work easier with the other color pairs initially, I think.
Yeah, green seems less of a mystery to me going in than it did in Foundations. Like the 4/4 you shouted out that has effectively heroic draw card. That card is incredibly impressive. And I think green is a home for gates/just play your good cards, which leads us into some points you have about how the format feels. One of the things you said, like when I first tuned into your stream on Thursday night, was you were like, you just said, you just play the good cards, right? And it's a simple phrase, but it's not something that often occurs to me, as I love to like, oh, and if I add this card and I get like in half a percentage point of value here, like sort of the reason I'm sort of off of black white is it felt like you had to build this sort of engine of things that die into afterlife tokens or whatever, and ways to sacrifice them, and your Zulaport cutthroat. And then someone else just like plays a card that matters and you're like, oh, scramble, scramble, scramble. Where's my removal? How do I interact with this? Oh, I'm dead. And so I think green gets to do that. I think green gets to sort of certainly play powerful cards that just invalidate game states and also play big, large threats that you need removal for. So I think green can sort of put a pin, like can sort of say balls in your court, opponent. And if you have the ball, if you have the way to answer that, then whatever sports analogy I'm trying to make.
You're doing great, buddy. Keep going.
You win, but I do think green can stick it to the opponent in that respect.
So do you like green moving up the color power rankings, or do you like it in last?
You're tapping out.
It sounds like you're getting dangerously close to having an opinion here. We lost him, folks.
I don't know why that tickled me so much to imply that I don't have... I have a podcast. I have a platform where I speak for an hour to an hour and a half about Magic every week, and I try and reserve no opinions.
But you are very... The first week of a format, you don't like talking about archetypes or color power rankings.
And this isn't even the first week. This is the zero week. We've barely done anything. So, but I would say... I don't think green is in last place, and I don't think the four green color pairs should be in tier 3/tier 2. Like green, I think, is more impressive than that to me.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of how the format feels and playing the good cards, that did stick out to me when I watched your drafts, like taking Dictate of Erebos over, I forget what you took it over, but the
Sarkhan Unbound, yes, or whatever.
I mean, you were saying like Sarkhan's great, but I want to try Dictate of Erebos. But Dictate of Erebos just, I think, is kind of a bad card. I thought that before watching you play with it, and then that was confirmed watching you play with it.
For sure.
Which is, it's an enchantment, 3BB. Whenever a creature of yours dies, the opponent has to sacrifice a creature, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, you had a banger of a planeswalker there you could have taken. But then also there was I don't remember which draft it was. There was one where you could have been taking Boros Reckoners. And I was just thinking like Boros Reckoners better than every card you have right now. And you're not you're not wanting to switch for it. But, and again, like you're going in trying to learn stuff. And I think you are pushing boundaries, and that's how you like to approach formats.
Yeah.
But I think that's maybe why you've not been having success so far because you've been playing some seriously suboptimal cards compared to the power level of the format, just from what I see. And there are just a lot of really great cards that you can play.
And I think that's the thing to focus. So what you said, you were like, you just play the good cards and whatever synergy comes by virtue of playing good cards that play well together, you'll have some synergy. But the thing that I was trying to do, because I was like, oh, it's a master set. Like I was trying to do on Thursday was like, go after, oh, okay, Dictate of Erebos. And then I'll build like a sacrifice thing and I'll have value and I'll be able to, you know, get my opponent. And that's just not the way to do it.
Yeah, I think the average individual card quality is much higher than in a normal's master set. And a lot of times in master sets, you can ignore what your opponent is doing and just focus on doing your own thing really well. And doing your own thing really well is oftentimes good enough to overwhelm the opponent, which is what I felt like watching your draft videos. You were like, I'm going to sacrifice all this stuff, or I'm going to mono red like so hard or whatever. But the format is more interactive than that. It just feels like juiced up, very interactive games of Magic. Like you get rewarded for interacting with what your opponent's doing, because a lot of the synergy stuff is easy to break up if you can interact with your opponent also.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of like master sets in my mind, when I think of whatever Kaladesh Remastered or things like that, like they feel a little closer to Cube in my mind, where you're like, I'm building an archetype. I'm like building something that's like closer to a constructed deck than a limited deck. I don't think that's the case in this format. That's my feeling right now.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Yeah. So I would say really good cards, really good interaction, and then you're piecing together the synergies. And that's not necessarily going to be true. Like, that's why Boros Heroic sticks out so hard to me, because I think it's going to be such an easy lane to fall into, especially if you don't see the good cards, right? Because you're going to want to get the game over quick, because there are like Denrova Horrors running around everywhere, or there are all these value engines. And we should talk about the bonus sheets a little bit more. I think the Planeswalkers and several of the other bonus sheets look this way too, but the Planeswalkers sheet introduces a lot of bombs, right? Like there's a lot of, and maybe this couple weeks you want to play to the board more, because being able to pressure your opponent's Planeswalkers matters, or being able to protect your own Planeswalkers matters more. But the spells and devotion sheets look like they're going to juice up overall power of the format more. Like there's going to be more synergy going on, rather than like this week I've really liked fixing so far, because there's been like great Planeswalkers to splash. I passed you a Splashyok in the draft. We were sitting next to each other. I've splashed a Xenagos already, and having the option to do all that stuff is going to be great.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
The other thing that's really stuck out to me in the games, and this kind of ties into removal being good or interacting being good, but 2-for-1s matter. Like you're able to get 2-for-1s with your removal, like interacting when green goes to play that fight spell to try to get some bonuses with their heroic stuff or whatever. Being able to interact there at that point is really premium, and you can get 2-for-1s that way. But also, I guess what I'm trying to say is oftentimes in master sets, everything's a 2-for-1. Like, so it doesn't, like getting value doesn't matter, because there's just value spewing everywhere. That is not the case here. Again, like it just feels like slightly juiced up normal Magic to me.
Yes, that's the thing. It's like that feels akin to my point about it's not close to Cube where everything's powerful, everything's a 2-for-1. It's more about, like you said, just the dials turned up a little bit. But I agree with you, 2-for-1s matter. Like they're not abundant. They're not running around rampant.
Delve continues to be broken. Treasure Cruise should not have been in my green-white deck. Mea culpa there. But I mean, landing a Treasure Cruise or a Gurmag Angler for cheap, like it's just classic busted limited Magic. Treasure Cruise more so than Gurmag Angler, but both of them are very good and reasons to play towards getting that amount of cards in your graveyard. The other thing that really stuck out to me was it was tough to play against open mana from blue. Essence Scatters in the format, a common one in a blue instant counter target creature spell. Like that just feels horrible when, because a lot of the good cards are tied up in creatures. I mean, there's Planeswalkers this week also. Felt great casting a Planeswalker into one on a blue. But when you're going to cast your Denrova Horror or your 6-drop Dragon from red-black and your opponent has one on a blue open, and that's like your plan, it's tough to go for there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I agree. Blue gets to do a lot of counterplay in the format.
The other thing that we should shout out is that MDFCs are back in the format. We haven't talked about that at all yet. The cards that are land on one side, spell on the other from Zendikar Rising primarily, back to being Zendikar Remastered? No, you think it's Theros Remastered. It's not Theros Remastered. But anyway, I think that I was trying to figure out when I was drafting, like, are these good? Do I want them? And ultimately, I kind of decided initially, I don't care about these at all. But I hadn't played a lot of green yet. And I think, like, the green, white, red, the Naya space gets a lot less card draw if you're not playing Gnarlback Rhinos, for sure. And so I think those colors want the MDFCs a lot more. And if you're in the Grixis space where you're drawing cards and have a little more control over your own draws, sure, the MDFCs are nice, but not necessarily, you know, you're going after them pretty hard.
And for someone who's never played with MDFCs before or seen them in draft before, do you have advice for how high to take them and how they impact your mana base?
Also, why are they called MDFCs? If you've never seen them before, a modal double-faced card, which is a mouthful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think generally you don't take them that highly. You pick them up as you can, like kind of at the C plus level, once you know your colors. And sometimes I had some I still didn't put in the main, like in the couple of drafts that I did. But generally, you want to run like two of them in place of a land. So if you have two MDFCs, I might run like 16 lands plus two MDFCs, which then gives you kind of pseudo 18 lands, but also 24 spells, that kind of a thing. That's kind of generally how you should approach it.
We already talked about the format offering tools to combat different strategies, like Devour Flesh being an edict for the Hexproof Go Tall stuff, though I guess Selesnya Charm can maybe be counterplay to that counterplay, that sort of thing.
Well, there's just also cool stuff about like interacting with enchantments. There's ways to blow out auras as well at instant speed. I think the format looks really cool in best of three. It looks like there's going to be a lot of sideboarding stuff going on. And I think that is the thing I am most optimistic about for the format, is that it generally looks like if something pans out to be busted, you're going to be able to have some cards to try to rein that strategy back in.
Yeah, for sure.
Just a quick note about the bestow creatures which are running around. These are from Theros, where they're, you know, like a 2/2 flyer that you can then put as an enchantment creature onto another creature and give it +2/+2 and flying. And then when that creature dies, it would fall off. Those all felt pretty mediocre to me, unless they were the really good ones. It just felt I had to run them out. And maybe this was just bad deck building on my part, but I had to run them out in a lot of spots on curve. And playing those type of cards as your 2-drop or your 3-drop feels below the power level threshold of the format to me.
I agree. And I think you just want to be particularly aware of the bestow cost. It feels like there's a line of like they're either 1-mana or 2-mana creatures, and then their bestow cost is 4. And those feel like this air quote sweet spot. Once you're getting, I guess Nimbus Naiad is an exception because its bestow cost is 5. And I do think that is still pretty good as +2/+2 in flying. But largely there's a lot of other more expensive ones, like 4-mana 3/3s that then have a bestow cost of 7. Like, you're just not doing that in the format, I don't think.
Well, but even Leaf Crown Dryad, I think it's called, the one in a green 2/2 reach that you can bestow for 3 in a green. That feels horrible. Running that out as your 2-drop. Just absolutely abysmal. I played with it and I played against it. Every time my opponent played it, I was like, great, my opponent mulliganed. And every time I had to run it out on 2, I was like, well, this is a disaster.
Okay, that's fair.
Running late, no time for breakfast, and you're starving? Racing to meetings, band practice, school, whatever it is, we've all been there. But what if a delicious, nutritious meal could be ready in seconds?
This podcast is sponsored by Huel. H-U-E-L, the world's number one complete nutrition brand. With over 400 million meals sold worldwide, Huel is trusted by people like you looking to fuel their days with convenient, complete nutrition.
You can try it for yourself with our exclusive offer. 15% plus a free gift for new customers with the code LOL at Huel.com. Fuel your best with Huel today.
We're recording extra early this morning. Thank you, Ben, for accommodating my schedule. And I definitely did not have time to make breakfast, but Huel has me covered with their ready-to-drink Black Edition. I also really like using the Black Edition powder for after a workout, since I know it's packed with tons of protein and vitamins and minerals.
Huel is designed by experts to provide all the nutrients your body needs from a meal. Access to something this high quality and quick has never been easier. It's like if Quick Draft were actually enjoyable.
So take the leap and join the community of Hooligans with this exclusive offer for new customers. 15% plus a free gift with the code LOL at Huel.com.
That's 15% plus a free gift for new customers with the code LOL at Huel.com. Unlock a healthier, easier way to eat with Huel. Nutritionally complete meals in minutes so you can focus on what really matters.
So we're not going to go, you know, we sort of gave a name to all the two color pairs.
And it's a reprint set, so there's a ton of mechanics, and we're not going to read all of what they do. Like, you're just going to have to experience them for yourself if you haven't played with these cards before. But just to sort of try and bucket the things that are happening in the format into some spots to sort of understand it before you draft the set for the first time, try to put them in, I don't know, we've got about half a dozen ways to think about what's going on in the format. And the one thing we've alluded to, the first thing we've alluded to a lot so far, is creature targeting. So heroic, or using, you know, using a fight spell to trigger that 4/4 in green, whatever. And that's existing in Naya. So I'm not saying, again, we're going to have these grouped into three color pairs. I'm not saying draft three color decks. I'm saying this is where these kinds of interactions are going to exist. So creature targeting with heroic or auras or hexproof and protection, having large monsters, whether they're intrinsically large or they're large because of how you're suiting them up. That's all, I think, in the red, green, and white space.
Yeah, and I think those are going to exist more as separate decks, like red, white, heroic, green, white, going tall, like functioning differently. But as you said, this place is where all of those type of things live.
Mm-hmm.
And then next we've got Graveyard, which is living in the Sultai space. That's green, black, and blue. There's a ton of ways to self-mill. There's the Delve cards that we've alluded to, which get cheaper when you exile cards from your graveyard. There's ways to recur things out of the graveyard. And just to shout out a couple cards here that I guess maybe we're going to talk about these probably in our top commons list or our sleepers here, but stuff like Undead Butler, which is one and a black for a 1/2, and it ETBs and mills three cards. And then when it dies, you can get a creature back from your graveyard. That's just infinitely better in this format than it was in whatever its original format was.
Crimson Vow.
But all the stuff that self-mills, there's Commune with the Gods, one and a green sorcery that lets you look at five, put them in your graveyard, and then get a creature or land from among them, I think.
It's creature or enchantment.
Creature or enchantment. Excuse me. But all of these ways to fill your graveyard are much better than whatever they were in their original format and much more supported here.
Undead Butler is my early... this is where I'll have an opinion. Golden Egg Award for Undead Butler. That's my take.
I like it, except I'm not that jazzed about black.
Oh. Maybe I'm too much of a boomer. I'm like, black's got good removal. It's got some good synergy.
I don't know, but I do love black red and blue black.
Yeah.
I do really like Undead Butler. I like that as a pick for a golden egg. I also was thinking about that at the card.
It's extremely, extremely gluey and like sets up a lot of things for a lot of different decks.
Yes.
Next up, there's spells, which exists in the Jeskai space. So in white, red, and blue, there's Spell Mastery, there's Surge, there's creatures with adventure. You've got creatures with prowess, creatures with flash that let you play at instant speed. So you're taking advantage of your instants and sorceries, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump around here and like just pepper in with some opinions. So I was thinking more about Sultai graveyard stuff. I do think you'll be true Sultai if you're doing graveyard stuff. Like that I think is going to be a soupier deck, but also I think blue black kind of exists in there just as its own separate thing that doesn't care about the graveyard that much necessarily.
Correct. Well, and blue green doesn't care about the graveyard, but if your blue green deck is splashing black, then you'll probably have some stuff that cares about it. I will also say that there is tension in the Sultai graveyard stuff because you have things that, like Undead Butler, for example, is a great card that like I have felt tension with, not in a bad way, but just in you want to be aware of way of like, okay, I'm milling myself to enable my delve stuff, but I don't want to delve away everything because I'd like to be able to get a creature back when Undead Butler dies, or like I've got a Dreg Mangler hanging out in my graveyard and I want to be able to scavenge that. But like, you know, so just be aware of your graveyard is a resource, but it's a finite resource.
For sure. And then spells living in Jeskai here, like this feels less helpful to me. Like those other two buckets are definitely there, but all of the stuff in the Jeskai space is so disparate to me. Like blue red is spells, red white, like yes, you're going to have the prowess and the targeting from the pump spells, but that's just more red white heroic. And then white blue is definitely its own flyers kind of thing here. These all feel like more disparate decks to me.
I agree. I'm wondering if it will feel like the dials change when it's spells week for 2 weeks. You know, if like then it's like, oh, we've now added a handful of cards that make this feel a bit more cohesive. Unclear, yeah. But It's possible.
Next is Temur, which is where a lot of the Gates payoffs are going to live. And like the Gates thing is seated in. It is definitely just a deck that mm-hmm. lives there that you can draft. It's all the Gates payoffs from
Ravnica Allegiance.
Thank you. Ravnica Allegiance. There's Gates Ablaze, the Wrath. There's the Angel that gains you all the life. The only thing I think that is missing is Gate Colossus. Is Gate Colossus here?
Gate Colossus is here. Plus, there's two gate payoffs from Dragon's Maze, the Opal Lake and Ubalsar Gatekeepers. Those are both here, too.
Yeah, you were shouting in your draft video, I thought these were commons in their original format. No. And I was like, who remembers that? The only thing I remember about Dragon's Maze was it was a terrible format. That's the only thing I remember about Dragon's Maze.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
But that's what's going to be going on in the Temur space. And Mardu, again, definitely cares about sacrifice and attrition, which is our next bucket here, but not in the sense of like you're going to play a Mardu deck. Like black white is definitely aristocrats, black red's definitely mid range. And again, white red doesn't really get lumped into this bucket, but I like this as this is where you're going to find this kind of stuff. Mardu, you're going to find sacrifice and attrition strategies.
Yeah, exploit with afterlife tokens and embalming creatures coming back from the graveyard, etc.
But I think, again, back to a previous point, this stuff should be secondary, I think. Maybe with the exception of, that's kind of what I was getting at with like diving into some of the ones that feel better to me or not. Like certainly the creature targeting is a thing to go after. Like mm-hmm. whether it's red-white heroic or green-white with your Gnarlback Rhinos, I certainly think the graveyard's like a thing to go after. Gates, definitely a thing to go after. Sacrifice attrition and spells seem less so to me mm-hmm. a thing to go after. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah, I agree with
that. And that all of that should be secondary too. Just make sure you got some banger cards in your deck and can interact with your opponent.
Yeah, I think that's if you take nothing else away from this episode is that like just get your card evaluation goggles on and get them on right and you'll be fine. Like if you're just evaluating the cards intrinsically on their power level and putting the best cards you see in your deck, I think you'll have success.
One of the other things that stood out to me is there's definitely a Grixis good cards archetype too. This wasn't in one of your five buckets, but certainly all of the control cards in that space play really well together. Like a base black red deck splashing some Nerova Horrors or whatever is right at home.
Yeah, big agree.
All right, that takes us on to many lists, and I'm quite excited because usually we've got a spreadsheet that we both have access to. And so before recording, I get to see, well, what did Ben put in his top commons and his top uncommons? I'm going in blind. I know nothing about your opinions about these cards. So the lists that we have here for you, we've padded them out a little bit because of, we don't have any cards to argue about. So we got to talk about as many cards as possible. So we'll do a top three uncommon of each color as usual. We'll do a top 10 commons overall as usual. We'll have a top three signpost uncommons overall, which is actually, that's quite a short list for how many cards we have to choose from of 20. We have a sleeper cards list, which is any amount, and a notable cards list from the Planeswalker bonus sheet. And I think we'll probably try and do this every 2 weeks, you know, to prep you for, okay, it's spells week we're always going to call it week, but it's for 2 weeks. Hey, it's spells week. Here's some cards to be on the lookout for and how we think it's going to change the landscape of the format. Any thing to say before we dive into these lists?
I don't think so. Other than that, I would like to not be shamed for the length of my lists.
I did have to check with Ben before we recorded. I was like, I had to check with him about how long some of his lists were. And I also wanted to just make sure, do you have just 10 cards on your commons list this time? Because that came back to us. All right, I'll kick things off with white. White's uncommons. In the number one slot, I have Stasis Snare. One white for an enchantment with flash. When it enters, exile target creature and opponent controls until this enchantment leaves the battlefield. In the number two slot, I have Silk Wrap. One and a white for an enchantment. When it enters, exile target creature with mana value 3 or less and opponent controls until Silk Wrap leaves the battlefield. And in the number three slot, I feel less confident about this, but I do have Hopeful Eidolon. Single white, 1/1 enchantment creature with bestow for 3 and a white. It's a 1/1 with lifelink. And if you pay the bestow cost, the enchanted creature gets +1/+1 and has lifelink.
We are 0-for on our white uncommon overlap.
Okay.
I thought about the 2-white removal spells. There's just so many ways to blow up artifacts and enchantments running around. Conclave Naturalist is going to be an auto include for every green deck. It's tough. I don't think those cards are if them leaving the thing around and getting another ETB from whatever you need to exile is tough.
So I'll say two things. Or maybe I'll say six things. I don't know. I'm going to start talking and we'll see what happens. One, you always underrate enchantment removal. That is your bit. You always hate Banishing Light no matter what. And then 2 weeks later, you are always like, yeah, I was wrong. It's actually pretty good. So just throwing that out there, like, I hear what you're saying every time about you can blow up the enchantment. But this time you really can. Oh, okay. This time you really can. That's a good point. The second thing I'll say is the graveyard really matters in this set. And being able, and there's not a lot of exile removal. Like, there's not the red, like, there's no red spell that's like, kill a thing. If damage would kill it this turn, exile it instead. Black doesn't have that. This is your way to make sure stuff dies and doesn't hit the graveyard for the Sultai decks to say, cool, scoop them back up in a few turns. So I hear what you're saying about being able to blow up these enchantments. I think you are, as you often do, highly underrating them.
That's fair. I feel very confident about my number one.
Okay.
Which is Triplicate Spirits, 4 white for a sorcery with Convoke, put 3/1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield.
I haven't seen this card cast yet. I assume you have.
I also have not. This card is just nutter butters, though. And that was the hardest part of watching your draft videos. There was like times I wanted you to take Triplicate Spirits and you just kept shipping them along. I love this card.
I think it's I'm curious to see how it plays out in the format because there doesn't seem to be one. I think in its original printing, I don't know, but my memory is that it was a common, so it might be.
That's what it was when I just pulled it up. Yeah.
So it's easier to pick up multiple copies of it, which is like, that's the dream, is chaining them together, right? The first Triplicate Spirits makes the next one cheaper. And I guess perhaps if you were watching a draft video of mine where I passed multiples of them, then maybe you can get multiples of them. But my feeling was, how do you fuel this? Like, how are you getting this? There don't seem to be the tools in my mind in the format to cast this for cheap.
Maybe that's the case, I guess. I don't know. White just seems like it floods the board early and then taking a turn to play. Triplicate Spirits just seems like it lines up so well against what I'm imagining the control strategies are. Like, I think I'm going to be miserable when I'm playing blue-black and my opponent plays Triplicate Spirits and I'm staring at the Devour Flesh in my hand that I have to try to account for the Boggles decks or whatever, you know?
Yeah, but green doesn't care at all about your one. You're setting up your 6-mana make 3/1/1 flyers, and green says, cool, I have 8/4/4 tramplers. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I guess. It sounds like you've been traumatized by green. I just have not been impressed.
You saw LSV Savage, man. I mean,
I did, yeah.
I'm interrupting your list. Please continue with Triplicate Spirits.
Okay, so Triplicate Spirits, number one. Well, I declared my confidence, which was basically, you know, throw off the gloves.
That's true.
Celestial Archon, I feel much less confident about. This is 3 white for a 4/4 flying first strike with bestow, 5 white to give enchanted creature +4/+4 flying and first strike. I think I like your removal spells better than that. And the third one is weird. And I think I would probably take this off the list after playing the format a bit more and or watching draft videos a bit more, but put Mentor of the Meek on here, which is 2 white for 2/2. Whenever another creature power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, you can pay 1. If you do, draw a card. It feels like this, again, forces you to build kind of a bad deck in that your deck's not fast, but also loses the late game.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I had a deck with 3 of these, this black-white deck I keep talking about, 3 of them. There's also you want to play it as your turn 3 play, right? Because it sets up everything else. Then it forces you to play off curve, which is terrible. And you're also like, you're like fingers crossed you don't kill this with Wild Slash.
So that every other card in my deck isn't horrible. Yeah, you kind of fold when you build your deck around Mentor the Meek. So I think I like the 2 removal spells plus Triplicate Spirits, if I could make a new list.
Great. Love it. What's going on in blue?
In blue, number one, I've got Murmuring Mystic as my top uncommon. 3 and a blue for a 1/5. When you cast an instant or sorcery, you make a blue bird creature token with flying. In the number 2 spot, I love a good Scroll Thief. I've got Jesse and Thief. 2 and a blue for a 1/3 with prowess. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. And then in the number 3 slot, I've got Illusory Angel. 2 and a blue for a 4/4 flyer. Cast it only if you've cast another spell this turn.
We're about to be 3 for 3. I do have Murmuring Mystic 1, Jesse and Thief 2. I put some interaction in the number three spot. I put Anchor to the Ether. It's two and a blue to top a creature and you scry one. Been pretty impressed by this card in the few drafts that I did on Thursday.
I was considering that. So I think we're very close on blue then.
In black, I've got Ultimate Price in the number one spot. One and a black for an instant. Destroy target monocolored creature. In the number two spot, I have Dreadhound, four black for a 6/6. When it enters, mill three cards, and whenever a creature dies or a creature card is put into a graveyard from a library, each opponent loses a life. And in the number three spot, I have Fellstinger, two and a black for a 3/2 death touch with exploit. When it enters and it exploits a creature, target player draws two cards and loses two life.
We're close here. I also have Ultimate Price as number one. I have a different number two. Dreadhound didn't make my list after playing with it. It felt bad. Like, I agree Dreadhound's a great card. It felt bad playing it for six mana and it not really having an ETB. And it kind of does, and you can attack the turn you play it, but like a lot of stuff has to be going in your favor for you to feel like it has an ETB. And it felt awkward playing a six drop without an ETB in the format. Yeah,
I could totally see it. This is the one card on my list I feel the least confident in.
Number two slot. So I have Priest of the Blood right here. Three black for a 2/2 ETBs. Put a 5/5 black demon creature with flying onto the battlefield. And then the priest that's left over has the text at the beginning of your upkeep. You lose two life. That making two bodies, one of which was a 5/5 flyer, felt great as far as like if you were behind, then your opponent what attacks and you chump with your priest, you're fine. You're left with a 5-mana 5/5 flyer, plus you gain some life. Mm-hmm. Or if you're ahead, you have two bodies to pressure them with. You don't mind losing two life. It gives you something you're interested in sacrificing. That card just felt great to me when I was playing it. And in the number three slot, I also have Fellstinger, the scorpion that can sacrifice something.
I like the priest on your list. That's a good call.
All right, takes us on to the red uncommons. A pretty, I think, stereotypical list here. I've got Draconic Roar at one. One in a red for an instant. As an additional cost to cast it, you can reveal a dragon card from your hand. It deals three damage to a creature. And if you revealed a dragon card or controlled a dragon when you cast it, it deals three damage to the creature's controller also. Number two slot, I've got Fight with Fire from OG Dominaria. This is two in a red for a sorcery with kicker, five in a red. It deals five damage to a creature. Or if you kick it, it deals 10 damage divided as you choose among any number of targets. And then number three slot, I've got Gates Ablaze. Two in a red for the sorcery, deals X damage to each creature, where X is the number of gates you control.
I think I probably... So my list has Draconic Roar 1 and Gates Ablaze 3, the same as you. I have a different number 2. I should probably have Fight with Fire replacing Gates Ablaze. But like Gates Ablaze is probably the biggest reason to go into the Gates deck. Like getting a sweeper at uncommon is really powerful, I think. I just think the Gates deck, in my mind, like I'm curious to hear your thoughts. But my feeling about the Gates deck is it's like a plan B. And it's more like what happens as a result of, like, let's say you start your draft with Sarkhan Unbound, that planeswalker that I passed in that video, which is a teamer colored planeswalker. Then you're like, okay, how am I going to cast this card? Probably in a Gates deck. And then you start to go there. But I don't think you should be taking, maybe Gates Ablaze is the one card, but the other Gates payoffs, I don't think you should be taking highly.
I generally agree with that. I didn't see Gate stuff at all yesterday, so it's hard, but I remember how powerful it was, and I think there's other stuff that's better than the Gates deck
in the format
from what I saw yesterday. But that it's a good plan B, like that if you're having a messy draft, you can try to get into the Gates deck. It's kind of like an off-ramp for a messy draft or whatever.
So yeah, that's my feeling, but I have a different number two as you, as a card that I think is really powerful, Heart Piercer Manticore. It's two red for a 4/3. When it enters, you can sack another creature. When you do, Heartpiercer Manticore deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target, and it has Embalm for five and a red, which basically means you can pay that mana cost to exile it from your graveyard, and then it comes in as a copy of itself, but it's a white zombie token instead.
Yeah, I like that card as well. I could see getting that on instead of Gates Ablaze.
And then in green, my number one is Clear Shot. These fight spells are so good in conjunction with Gnarlback Rhino, but this is just a bite spell. Two in a green for an instant. Target creature you control gets ++1 until end of turn. It deals damage equal to its power to target creature you don't control. Next, I have Honored Hydra. Five in a green for a 6/6 trample with Embalm for three in a green.
That card housed me so hard in a draft.
It's one of the many cards that, like, this demands an answer. And then, even if you have the answer, it is likely coming back.
And
well,
it's got
and also Self-Milliant, right. Playing it for four mana is great.
Yeah. And then in the number three spot, I have Seed Guardian 2GG for a 3/4 with reach. And when it dies, you create an XX elemental creature token where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard.
I've also got Clear Shot number one. I've got Honored Hydra at number two. And in the number three slot, I've got Pulse of Murasa, two and a green for an instant to return target creature land card from a graveyard to its owner's hand. You gain six life. Pulse is one of my favorite cards. I love that card.
That's a great take. Great take. I love it. After a rocky start with white, I would say fairly lockstep the rest of the way.
I didn't feel confident about my uncommons. It was hard to pick. They were for how obviously powerful a lot of the gold ones are.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of flatness in the uncommon space.
Well, speaking of, let's get to our list of top three multicolor uncommons, because I initially had this as let's do a list of five. I found it kind of hard to have a list of five. I feel good about my three, but I don't like for there being 20 cards on that you get to choose from for multicolor uncommons. I didn't feel like a lot of them were busted. They felt a lot more like to harken back to reasons versus rewards. A lot of them felt like rewards to me after you're in that color pair versus reasons to go after a color pair.
That's fair. I do have, speaking of the length of my list, I do have three OLI here, which is outside looking in.
I bet you do. Why don't you start with that? Why don't you start with your honorable mentions?
My OLIs? First OLI, Anax and Cymeed. One red white for the 3/2 first strike vigilance. Heroic gives your team +1/+1/+1 and trample. Also, along with that, 10th District Legionnaire, red white's other gold uncommon, red white for the 2/2 haste. And whenever you cast a spell that targets it, you put a +1/+1 counter on it, and then you can scry one, as well as Gore Clan Rampager, the two red green for the 4/4 trample with Blood Rush.
I don't have an OLI because I'm happy with my list, but I do have one from your OLI on my top three, which is Anax and Cymeed coming in at number three, the red white heroic. That card is just busted. It's so, so powerful and makes it really hard. Like if you're tapped out and your opponent attacks all or with that in play, like you're just like, it's really hard to block profitably. You're probably just losing. In the number two spot, I have Dinrova Horror, the 6-mana Dimir card that bounces something and then they discard a card. And in the number one spot, I have Bloodtithe Harvester.
Yeah, I've also got Bloodtithe 1 and Dinrova Horror 2. In the number three slot, I put Azorius Charm, blue-white for the instant creatures you control gain lifelink until end of turn, or you can draw a card or put an attacking or blocking creature on top of its owner's library.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that card's like I like that card. I can't imagine taking that
over Anax and Cymeed. Yeah, that's probably wrong.
And taking it to like go into Azorius for?
Yeah, I also agree with that. All right, that's wrong.
Top 10 commons. You want to go first?
I'll go first. Great. I'll plant my flag.
Yeah.
Hero of Erois. One and a white for a 2/2. Aura spells you cast cost one less to cast. And whenever you cast a spell that targets Hero of Erois, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Ardenvale Tactician. One white for the 2/3 flyer. And it's got an adventure, Dizzying Swoop. One and a white for an instant. Tap up to two target creatures.
Important note about Dizzying Swoop, which is cool in this format, is that you can target one of your own creatures to get a heroic trigger.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's why Ardenvale Tactician is already great. And it's going to be even better in this format.
Mm-hmm.
Sejiri Shelter, the only MDFC to make my list, says one and a white for an instant. Target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. Essence Scatter, gotta be there. One and a blue instant counter creature spell. Essence Scatter is oppressive. Treasure Cruise, 7 blue sorcery, draw 3 cards. It's got Delve. Obnixilus's Cruelty, 2 and a black for an instant. Target creature gets -5 until end of turn. If that creature would die this turn, exile it instead.
Important text.
For sure. Fall of the Hammer, one and a red instant target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to another target creature. This is normally a fine removal spell, but is juiced in the format because of all the heroic stuff running around. Like, this is the removal spell you want in your red-white heroic deck.
It's an instant speed bite. That's fall?
Yeah.
It's not fight? Okay.
It's not fight.
In my head, I had it as fight. Okay, cool.
No, it's very good.
Yeah.
And I think it being so good in the heroic deck is another reason you want your own instant speed interaction, because your opponent's going to go for this to try to get some insane heroic turn, and you being able to break that up.
Yes.
Really, really, really important. Wild Slash, red for an instant, deals 2 damage to target creature or player, and if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, damage can't be prevented this turn. District Guide, 2 and a green, ETB, search your library for a basic land card or a gate card, reveal it, put it in your hand, then shuffle your library. just going back to two for ones mattering, green really wants to splash, that sort of thing. I was also really happy playing Pilgrim's Eye. Pilgrim's Eye is the last card on my list. 3 mana for a 1/1 flyer. ETBs, search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it in your hand, then shuffle. I think one of the best things I can say for myself for the format is that Pilgrim's Eye feeling good is a really good sign for format health for me, I think. Because it would be easy if the aggro decks were too broken for Pilgrim's Eye to just not matter, or if the power level were too juiced, like Pilgrim's Eye would just be irrelevant. But Pilgrim's Eye was nice. Like, it gave me a body, let me jump block something, let me splash a powerful card. It did a lot.
I totally agree. So you also have, the reason you don't have any multicolored cards on your list is you also have a top three multicolor commons list, correct?
Correct. I floated in our Discord chat, can I get a top three gold commons list as well? And Ethan was like, I guess, but can you not just put them in your top 10 commons list? And I was like, you can't, but they're a different thing. Like, they're their own breed.
Maybe. I don't know. I think, whatever. I have one gold common, and it's on my top 10 list, and I don't have that other list. So anyway, we have half overlap.
So I've got 13 top commons.
Yeah. Thank you for calling a spade there. So the overlap we have is Treasure Cruise, Essence Scatter, Obnixilus's Cruelty, District Guide, and Pilgrim's Eye are on my list.
Wow.
I don't have a single white common on my list. Ooh. The one that was on there was Ardenvale Tactician. And after playing with it, I was kind of underwhelmed. And I played with it mostly in black-white, which I think is just a bad deck. So take that for what you will. But I'm not sure that it, like, I saw all of the things. I was like, oh, this card was one of the best commons in its original set. I think it's going to be great here because of the heroic stuff. Not sure. I'm not sure it's got a home, personally. So that's my take about white. I have a blue common that is not on your list, which is Cloudfin Raptor. Single blue for an 0/1 flyer with evolve, meaning if a creature with greater power or greater toughness enters, this gets a +1/+1 counter. I went back and forth about this card, a banger in its original format. And it on turn one was a problem for me every time I faced it. I found this card impressive.
What is its home? Is it only blue-white? Like, where are you happy with it other than blue-white?
I think it's just a deck. I think it's just its deck.
Okay.
That's what I think. It's like, you know, if you're having to do a plan B in the format, Cloudfin Raptor is a great plan B. And you get three of those, and that's your deck.
Okay.
I have Undead Butler, the aforementioned Golden Egg contender on my list. I have a bit of a hot take in red. I have maybe two hot takes in red. One is that Wild Slash is not on my list.
That seems insane to me.
It is probably insane, but I think in the world of Go Tall and everyone playing pump spells and protection spells, I think Wild Slash has like a very narrow window of being really good. And then is going to be quickly invalidated. I think it's my take on the card is that it's going to be like all your red decks will want to play, will happily play one copy and then significant diminishing returns past that. These are not, this is not Stab and Burst Lightning, not even close. That's my take.
I agree with that, but I think the first copy is so good.
Now that may be true. That's why I said it's a hot take. It wouldn't be hot if you didn't furrow your brow at it. I have a Crow and Crusader on my list. Single red for a 1/1 with heroic. You make a 1/1 token with haste. I think.
How does a Crow and Crusader line up against Hornet's Nest? How does that work out?
Actually, I don't know. I've never seen that because I blacked it out from my memory from how traumatic it was to face that card. I also have Gearper Gearcrafter on my list, which is 2 and a red for a 2/1. When it enters, you make a 1/1 Thopter with flying. I've been impressed by both of those cards. I have Gnarlback Rhino on my list, the 4 mana 4/4 with trample and green. That has effectively heroic. Whenever you target it, you draw a card. And one gold common made my list, which is Dreadbore, black red for a sorcery, destroy a creature or planeswalker.
Okay, I like your list. A Crow and Crusader, some of yours made my OLI.
Okay.
Or my sleeper cards list. Wait. Undead Butler was on my sleeper cards list.
Okay.
A Crow and Crusader was on my sleeper cards list. And Gnarlback Rhino should just be in my top 10 list. I feel pretty confident that is a very good card.
That's going to be the best green common. I feel pretty confident in that after seeing it in play.
Yes, I would agree with that as well. A couple things from my sleeper cards list that we have not shouted yet. Falaji Archaeologist. It's one and a blue for the 0-3. Whenever it ETBs, you mill three. You can put a non-creature, non-land card from among the cards milled this way into your hand. If you don't, put a +1/+1 counter on Falaji Archaeologist. That just playing beautifully with Treasure Cruise is so nice for blue.
And Cloudfin Raptor. Like, there's your deck. Cloudfin Raptor on one, Falaji Archaeologist on two, grow your raptor, find your Treasure Cruise. Like, I think there's something to be said there.
That's what I mean. That's why I like blue. Like, yeah. Blue's cards just all... they all play so well together, and they do... they meet a lot of what the format asks of you, I think. Another one that is in my sleeper cards, speaking of blue cards, is Ingenious Scob. 2 and a blue for 2/3 prowess. And you can pay a blue to give it +1/-1 until end of turn. The card's just huge. It's house. It's very difficult to play against when your opponent attacks with it or when they're holding it back for you to attack into it if they've got open mana. There's just, it's just a much bigger body than it seems for 2 and a blue. I've got Nimbus Naiad. I've been very impressed with this. Normally not the type of card I like, but it housed me pretty good yesterday. 2 and a blue for the 2/2 flyer. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has flying if you bestow it for 4 and a blue. I've got Gurmag Angler. I love a good delve card. 6 and a black for the 5/5 with delve. And then the last one that we haven't shouted is Rimrock Knight. 1 and a red for a 3/1 that can't block. And you can pay red for Boulder Rush, which is an instant to give target creature +2/+0 until end of turn.
You mentioning Ingenious Scob reminded me, it's maybe can't be on my sleeper list because it's an uncommon, but a card I do want to shout out that I was impressed / surprised by is Cruel Revival. It's 4 and a black for an instant. Destroy target non-zombie creature. It can't be regenerated. Return up to 1 target zombie card from your graveyard to your hand. Everything is a zombie in black, basically.
Yes.
Including Dreg Mangler, which I tried to target with this, and then I was like, oh no, that is a zombie, whatever, zombie plant. But so everything's a zombie in black, and so you're going to have stuff to get back, and as long as you're playing against a non-black opponent, you'll have a good target with this, which makes a 5-mana removal spell able to stomach. I have 3 on my list of sleeper cards. We talked about one already, which is Selesnya Charm. I'm really impressed by that. Is a green-white common. Supernatural Stamina, just like shout this out. This is going to be really good. Single black instant. Until end of turn, target creature gets +2/+0 and gains. When this creature dies, return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control. It's a really powerful way to rebuy some ETBs. Plays extremely well with Bloodtithe Harvester. Target it, tap, sack it, kill a thing. Harvester comes back. And Audacity impressed me. Single green aura. Enchanted creature gets +2/+0 and has trample. And when Audacity goes to the graveyard from the battlefield, you draw a card.
Audacity felt horrible to me playing with it, but maybe that's just because my deck was bad.
I think it might be your deck was bad.
In what respect has Audacity impressed you and why?
Probably in the respect of me playing a bunch of little derpy creatures that cannot deal. Like, you know, it's the same thing as Trample being the impressive thing in Foundations when you're playing Rats and Cats.
And Gnawback Rhino already has it. Like, I just don't think you need Audacity.
I think this is going to perform well. That's my take. I think it's going to perform well. Like, just turning you're going to have creatures other than Gnarlback Rhino. And even if this is going on a 2/2, especially a 3/3, making it a 5/3 with trample that says when this dies, you draw a card. It's really good.
Okay. My top 3 gold commons. Well, you've already got Dreadbore on yours, so don't need to shut that out. That card's obviously insane. Liev Sky Knight, we've talked about. That's the 1 blue-white 3/1 flyer. And then Possessed Scob has seemed excellent. 3 blue-black for a 3/2. When ETBs, you can return target instant sorcery or creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, I like all those takes. I haven't seen the Possessed Scob cast this iteration yet, but flagged it in my perusal of the spoiler to be like, yeah, that seems like a good card. So
I mean, it wasn't uncommon. It's been downshifted to common. Right. It does exactly what blue-black wants to do. Blue-black looks great. Like, I also have not seen it, but I can't imagine that it is not broken in half.
Do you have any cards you want to specifically shout out from the Planeswalker bonus sheet?
I do. First is Oval Chase Daredevil. This card was insane for me. This is 3 and a black, 4/2. Whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, you can return Oval Chase Daredevil from your graveyard to your hand. It's very good in black red. I think that's probably its home. There's a lot of cards that come that aren't artifacts, but come with an artifact, whether it's a Thopter token or Bloodtithe Harvester bringing along a blood token. But Oval Chase Daredevil was right at home in red black's attrition-y kind of game plan. And then the other one is Goblin Heel Cutter. I'm so glad that this is on a bonus sheet and not in the format the whole time. It says 3 and a red for a 3/2. Whenever it attacks, target creature can't block this turn. And it's got dash for 2 and a red.
Yeah, that card was great in its original format. And I am also happy that it will only be here for 2 weeks. A couple other cards that I think will be players in the next couple weeks. One is Sungrace Pegasus. 1 and a white for a 1/2 with flying and lifelink. I think if you're doing any, I think specifically in green white, but if you're doing any kind of Gotal targeting your creatures, heroic stuff, flying lifelink just wears, you know, anything bestowed on this is going to be great. Makes it really hard to race. And if you're protecting it as well, I think this will be good. And Reckless Bushwhacker, 2 and a red for a 2/1 with haste. It has a surge cost as well of 1 and a red. And surge means that if you've cast another spell that turn, you can pay the surge cost. And when Reckless Bushwhacker enters, if its surge cost was paid, other creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain haste until end of turn. I got to have a busted turn with this with a bunch of 1/1 tokens from my Acheron Crusader. And I do think that is a plan that red can have is go wide with Bushwhacker.
Yeah, I hear that.
Okay. Those are all my lists. Do you have any other secret lists? Any other chance for you to be able to shout out some 16 OLIs or anything like that?
No, no other secret lists. I do just on the Planeswalker bonus sheet. There are lots of ways to get Planeswalkers from empty boards. Like your Planeswalkers are not safe if you've stuck it on a board where your opponent has nothing, like tapping out for your Planeswalker. And even I got wrecked one time. I had Xenagos. And my opponent, I got Xenagos onto a controlled board, empty board, and my opponent passed on their turn. And I was like, oh, great. This game is over. And I forget what I did with Xenagos, but I cast a spell and they had the Awaken counter spell. And so then they made a creature and countered my spell and then killed my Xenagos. And like, I was just in absolute shambles.
Wow.
So I do think, and Goblin Heel Cutter, I assume that is why it is also on the bonus sheet list.
Yeah.
Like, there's just ways to get to Planeswalkers, I think. So I think building your deck appropriately, if you've got Planeswalkers that are good, making sure you play to the board, maybe playing to the board a little bit more than otherwise, if you're blue-black control or something like that, so that you can pressure Planeswalkers. I know I watched a video with you with a hand of removal spells for creatures in hand, like staring down an Obnix list. Like, they're around, and they are... I think that's what the Planeswalker bonus sheet is doing to the format these 2 weeks, is that like it's putting a lot of broken Planeswalkers into the games that are intrinsically powerful cards that I'm glad will be here for 2 weeks and then we'll be gone. But being able to pick those, splash them in the draft, and then know that you're likely going to have to be tackling them, much like War of the Spark, like planning for your opponents to have some Planeswalkers.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's it for me. I think we've given a lot of great information here. As you're going into your first drafts, I would take some really powerful cards, make sure you can interact with your opponent, and then assemble whatever synergies you can underneath that.
And expect, if the game is going to the middle stages, to see some Planeswalkers.
Yes, for sure. This format looks sweet. I know you are not optimistic. I am thrilled to have something to draft other than Foundations. I'm thrilled to have a more powerful format. Thrilled to have some control over what my draws are without playing very low powered cards to try to help smooth the power of my draws. So yeah, I am locked and loaded for Pioneer Masters.
I mean, I'm excited to play something new. Yeah, whether or not this will keep my attention for 6 whole weeks, we'll have to see about that.
All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. We'll have a tier list up for Pioneer Masters, and we will also have all of our episode backlogs, links to our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams respectively, our merch courtesy of TeePublic, our Patreon, if you're interested in checking that out. All of that's available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback for the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.